Do you schedule and host events in the Jewish community? Conferences, webinars, local events? Please consider adding your events to JCast Network's newest project, the Jewish Communal Events Calendar. Don't schedule events, but know someone who does? Invite them to add their events. If we all work together, we can create another wonderful resource for the Jewish community. Visit our calendar and post your events at jcastnetwork.org/jc.
Welcome to the Jewish Hour. I'm your host, Herschel Finman. I hope you had a great Passover, as Passover has indeed passed over. We are in the weeks of Sephira, quasi-state of mourning, which we'll talk about in the upcoming weeks, since there are six of them. But there is no instrumental music. We opened up with some a cappella music, and we'll be featuring a cappella music throughout the show. In this half hour of the show, we will be featuring a rebroadcast with artist Archie Rand, who wrote a wonderful book called 613 about his installation of 613 commandments depicted in 20 by 20 squares all stacked up together. The portion of the week, yes, after a two-week hiatus, the portion is back. It's the portion of Achrimos in the book of Leviticus, chapter 16 and following. We've got a dynamite story about the Baal Shem Tov at the end, hopefully if there's time. Before we do anything else, let's get right to the news. Israeli troops shot and killed two Palestinians whom soldiers said were attempting to attack Israelis with knives at a West Bank checkpoint near Ramallah. No Israelis were injured. IDF soldiers aided a Palestinian man who had been attacked because he looked Jewish. The man was bleeding from under his chin and on the top of his head after he was attacked by rocks. A little disconcerting news. 1,500 cracks, surface distortions, and other defects were discovered in Israel's Dimona nuclear reactor core. Officials say the defects pose no immediate danger, but raise concern that the reactor built in the early 1960s needs to be replaced. This is Israel's secret reactor. This is like the world's worst-kept secret. A man was rescued after falling during a hike in the Tamarin River near the Dead Sea. Rescue units lifted him from an 80-meter deep ravine. The man was only lightly injured and taken to hospital. Chinese Hainan Airlines' first commercial flight to Israel landed at Ben-Gurion Airport this week. The plane was welcomed by state ceremony with Tourism Minister Yariv Levin and Transportation Minister Yisrael Katz. Let's hear it for Trans-Asiatic Transport. Iowa became the 21st state to pass legislation against the Boycott, Divestment, and Sanctions movement known as the BDS. There are still five states working on similar measures, which bring it up to 26, still leaving 24 that still have to do it. They should just do it federally. And finally, the city of Rome, my wife Hannah will be very happy about this one, the city of Rome will be opening its 2,000-year-old Villa Randanini Jewish catacombs to the public for the first time between May 1st and June 5th. The catacombs were discovered way back in 1859, and they never opened them. The walls of the tunnels have inscriptions in Greek, Latin, and Hebrew giving information about the Jews who were buried in said catacombs. And that's the news.
Some of the best jobs in the world are in the radio and television industry, and you too can join the workforce in as little as 8 months when you complete your hands-on training at the Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts located in Southfield, Michigan. At Specs Howard School, students get to play and learn at the same time. Imagine spending your class time behind the microphone, spinning music and hosting your own radio show, or designing and lighting a set for your own TV program, running a camera, learning to edit, directing a program. When you go to Specs, your day will be anything but dull. And if school is this fun, imagine how exciting it is to work in the growing industry. In addition, the credits you earn while attending Specs Howard School are currently accepted at 14 area colleges and universities. If you've always wanted the best job in the world, call for a tour of Specs Howard School at 248-358-9000. That's 248-358-9000, or visit them on the web at specshoward.edu. Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts. This is where you start.
Hey, Shulton, and here you're listening to the Jewish Hour. We have on the line our famed artist Archie Rand has just come out with a book called The 613, his depiction and portrayal of all 613 commandments plus. How are you today, Archie?
Okay. Baruch Hashem. How are you, Herschel?
Good. Thank you so much for coming on. This is an exciting piece. When I heard about this, I just went, wow, that's absolutely incredible that someone would actually go to depict 613 commandments. So let's hear some of the backstory about what was your impetus in doing it, Archie?
Well, for a number of years, I had been working with Jewish subject matter. My children had gone to the Yeshiva Flatbush, and I became involved with doing murals that had Jewish content. Unaware at the time, being a secular artist, that there was not only an understood but not necessarily halachic prescription against making art. I just thought I was an artist and this was an interesting thing to do. And as the years went on, I realized that my friends who were artists were very disturbed by the fact that I was doing Jewish subject matter in what would ordinarily be considered secular work. And I took that as a challenge. I said, there's something wrong here. And for many years, I struggled with the idea of whether or not I could merge this into my secular output I was showing in New York. And by about 1985, it sort of collapsed. A couple of critics noticed that in some of my large-scale mural work that I was bringing in things that could be interpreted as, you know, midrashic illustrations. And I figured, okay, I don't have to keep these separate anymore. And then I decided that if I'm going to do this, I should back up. I'm sorry. Can I do that? I can back up.
Yes, that's fine.
In 1974, I was given a commission to do the interior of an Orthodox synagogue, to do about 8,000 to 12,000 square feet of murals. And some members of the synagogue became very disturbed that there was painting. So the case, it wasn't brought to a Beit Din, but it was brought to Harav Moshe Feinstein of blessed memory. And Moshe Feinstein, to my shock, said not only is Jewish art permissible, but under almost all circumstances, it can be done. And I figured...
Archie, let me interrupt over here. Let's back up a little bit even more than that. Let's give a little bit of backstory. What was the objection of the congregation to the art that you were picking? I'm sure it looked nice.
Well, yeah, they were two major objections. This was Congregation B'nai Yosef in Brooklyn, which is now rather famous as the Painted Shul, at least among Jewish art circles. But one was that when I was painting Bereshit, I said, well, you know, before the creation of light, there's the visual equivalent of an absence of light, which is black. So before I put the imagery on the walls, I painted the wall black, and some members of the congregation saw that as a, for lack of a better word, a superstitious, but I wouldn't credit them with something so base as that, but they didn't like the black on the wall. And at that point, they decided that since there was no precedent for having paintings in the shul, that what I was doing was halakhically improper.
But there have been art in synagogues. I mean, the Chagall windows are how old already that, you know?
Yeah, but the Chagall windows are not in synagogues.
That's true. They're in the hospital.
And also, stained glass windows were imported from the church. That is, it's not a Jewish tradition. And the reason that stained glass windows are allowed is because the transparency of the glass makes the imagery non-tangible and therefore not capable of being idolatrous because you're basically looking through it. So some of the technicalities of the halakha become very, very strained at that point. So there's many, many synagogues with stained glass windows, but because it's obviously glass and not a corporeal object, there's no rabbinical question as to whether or not it's kosher or not.
Mm-hmm. So this mural that you were painting in the synagogue in Flatbush, Brooklyn, was it in the sanctuary? Was it in the lobby or the social hall?
Oh, it was in the It was in the sanctuary. It was, in fact, the first thing they asked me to do was to do a kind of scale model of the Kotel. And I had a wall about 30 feet high and maybe 40, 50 feet across that was divided by two windows. And I did that first. And that was very successful. So they said, oh, you can continue to paint the rest of the place. And the rest of the place is this large sanctuary. So at first I put down the menorah, then I put down the Magen David, and I said, you know, I've got 38 more panels to go, all of them 10 feet high and 15 feet across. It was an enormous amount of space. And I ran out of imagery. I said, so I started to research and realized there was none because of numerous circumstances. And I had to go down to the Lakewood Yeshiva, where I sat and learned with the students there and found out basically just what situations and what nouns, basically, nouns. You know, it says, mm-hmm. Hashem does this, there's this fish, there's this chair, there's this tree, and I said, okay, now I've got some images. But I realized at the same time what Rav Moshe said was that when you use your skills as an artist, if you use them for the glory of Hashem, then that's permitted by the community and even lauded by the community. And if you don't, he very cryptically answered, then you will have to answer for that. And I assume he mentioned answer in the world to come. Mm-hmm. So I thought, okay, if somebody has a picture in the house of a glowing Magen David or a glowing menorah, that's very nice. That's communal identification. But that doesn't further the process of meditation with, you know, any further meditation necessarily. I mean, it could. But, you know, if you're an artist and if you have this mission to do something, you know, al Kiddush Hashem, then you really have to do something a little bit deeper. And at that point, I ran into a problem. I said, you know, what is it that you could do? And I'm digressing a bit, but at that time there were also many artists who were working what they called Kabbalistically, which I always found a kind of a ruse. Not that I doubt that people have genuine Kabbalistic interest, but the lay person, you know, is going to find that very abstruse information. So some painters will do very abstract works and have a couple of letters of the alphabet floating around in it and a couple of circles, and they'll tell you that they meditated for 20 years and came up with this image. And I have no reason not to believe that. I figure, okay, that's perfectly valid, and this artist is apparently a very mystic person, or these many artists, but that's not going to help the regular person identify more with their conversation.
Yeah, let me jump in right here. One of the points of contention that my wife and I had is in the DIA, there is a painting by Newman, Barnett Newman.
Barnett Newman.
Yeah. So I walked up, and I'm not an artist, so, and if I can do it, then to me it's not art. And then there is an 8 foot wide by 6 foot high painting.
It's
burgundy with a white line down the middle. And I said, why is there a painting of a ping pong table on the wall here? And she got very mad. And she went, this whole thing, no, that's supposed to be like the introduction of God's infiniteness into the holy void. And it's just like, you know, it looks like a ping pong table. So you're right, as far as interpretive art, when you're talking about modern things and when you're talking about such ethereal concepts as Jewish mysticism, it could get really lost on people.
Well, I'm with your wife on this one. One of the problems that we have as Jews is that for many reasons, both internally and externally, the digestive tract for absorbing the visual has been amputated from us as a people. And that has gone into basically accepting the literate. So we're people of ideas, we're people of learning, we're people of reading. The notion of absorbing the visual as information, that you looked at that and you saw a ping pong table, you made a literal transcription of what it was you were seeing. And that's the perfectly normal, you know, more often than not, Jewish response to abstract pictures. Your wife, however, for some reason, Baruch Hashem, has some visual digestive juices. And what Barnett Newman is doing is, well, I'm not going to repeat it, but it's very much what your wife said. The problem that I have, getting back to the 613, is that a lot of this information, Barnett Newman was a Kabbalist. He was a deeply learned, not an observant person, but he was, in fact, his first catalog was written by a non-Jewish person, a museum director, who spent the whole time going through medieval Kabbalistic symbols and what it meant to Newman. But Newman is basically a straight abstract painter. He's kind of like Mark Rothko with a witness in it. You know, it's mm-hmm. like the sublime thing. But what I thought about was that the Tayag Mitzvot is something that most Jews, unless they're very observant, will not even look at in their entire lifetime. They won't even know they exist. In fact, since the book has come out, conservative and reform Jews have said to me, I didn't even know there was 613.
I hear that all the time.
Yeah, and I thought, you know, this is a very interesting challenge. That is, I've done things like I did the 39 forbidden labors of Shabbat. I've done the 54 parshas. And I thought, you know, if I'm going to take on something at the very armature of Yiddishkeit, at the very heart of Judaism, I can't do it in a way that might be seen as a New Yorker cartoon or a kind of, you know, flip approach to something. I need something so enormous that no matter how silly or offhanded it may seem, which is in fact my outreach towards the visual digestive tract, the simple number of it is going to quell any notions that this is in fact a joke on my part. So the 613 became that kind of challenge. It became, you know, let's do something that's very, very, very Jewish, and let's do something that's so big that nobody can think I'm making fun of it, even though the pictures seem very comic. So in a certain sense, it's a very inept kind of missionizing to the most far-reaching aspects, not only of non-affiliated Jews. And I must tell you, I myself am not an observant person, but I love being Jewish, and I love the Jewish people. And I figured this is, you know, everyone has their place, like Reb Moshe said. And I figured, you know, this is interesting also. I've been getting letters from evangelical groups, non-Jews, who are very appreciative that they're having this aspect of Tanakh sent to them. So I figured, what I really have to do here, because you said, you know, I'm portraying the 613. I'm not really portraying them. They're not illustrations. As you've well found out from looking at the book, there are some pictures that seem to make no sense when compared with the commandment. Mm-hmm. And what I figured was is I had to make the visual primary, which is different than what most Jewish artists do, which is making the textual primary. Because when you make the text primary, you end up illustrating. And when you end up illustrating, you go right back to square one again. That is, you go back to a reinvestment in learning, which is what the Orthodox outreach groups do, which is very commendable. But there are people, especially in this digital age, that haven't got the patience or the interest to go back to traditional learning. So I figured what I have to do now is, since I have the Heksher and since I have the 2,000-year trajectory since we lost our centrality in Yerushalayim, to reinvest Yiddishkeit with the visual, I have to go to the farthest ends of that diagram, of that perimeter, and get those people who haven't the faintest interest in this thing, but simply think the drawings or the paintings are cool. And then they will end up having read a mitzvah that they never would have come across in their entire life. It never would have opened up. And a majority of the people who are buying this book, in fact, are not observant. They just think it's cool. And meanwhile, I've placed the Tayag Mitzvot into households that never would have had them.
Indeed.
And I figure this is a good use of my life at this point.
Yeah. Indeed. If you're just tuning in, our guest today is Archie Rand. He's an artist, put together a book of his paintings, The 613 Commandments. Did you, when first of all, let me ask you, how long did it take you to paint all 613 of these pictures? And how big are the original pictures?
The pictures are 20 by 16 inches. But
so that's fair size.
Yeah, it was planned as one painting, though. That is, they were at the back of the book, there's a photograph of the installation in my studio. And the actual painting is literally 100 feet long and 17 and a half feet high. It's one enormous picture. And when the idea of the book came up and we realized we would have to put the individual panels of the painting into it, it was only at that point that we decided it was essential that we put the specific mitzvah that is numbered in the Hebrew numbering system on the painting with the visual image. But the book represents one piece of work. It's basically a mural of the Tayag Mitzvot.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Did you have in mind, did you want to be edgy in your depiction of these mitzvahs?
It was absolutely necessary, because if you're not edgy, then you're then you're addressing the very community that has two demerits as far as the visual is concerned. The first is that they will not accept even the notion of applying the visual to the mitzvot. And the second is that they will demand that the pictures be, in fact, illustrative to the point of rabbinical commentary. And the more, as I said before, the more textually dominant the pictures become, the less effective they become visually, because the more they replicate the dominant text. So in order to do that, I had to go outside of the text and make pictures that were first familiar, available, even silly, that would attract the visual attention and then put the textual second, which seems like possibly in this day and age a non-Jewish or disrespectful thing to do. But in fact, it's not, because we have evidence of very fine Jewish wall art existing in the second century at the time of the Talmud. And the fact that very little of that exists since the second century is a matter of the destruction of these buildings. But certainly this work had been done. There was a Jewish component of the visual in early temple era Yiddishkeit, and I simply wanted to find some way among a number of other artists to start to reestablish that, so that we were not cut off from that sensate appetite that all humans have. Am I getting anywhere with this?
Yeah, I hear you. Yes, indeed. You answered the question exactly, 100%. There, different rabbis over the centuries have codified the 613 in different orders, mm-hmm. and I'm not familiar with the order that you chose.
I was under the assumption, this is very surprising, I was under the assumption that I was using Rambam's order, and I actually pulled the number off a Chabad website.
Okay.
So one of us is...
I'm not up on the end of... I never got to the end of Sefer HaMitzvahs from the Rambam.
I hope it's not me, but if so, I did it with the right intentions anyway.
Okay, so you chose the Rambam's order of things, and therefore the Rambam's interpretation as to what is a mitzvah and what isn't, because they're... It doesn't say anywhere. First of all, the mitzvahs are enumerated in the five books of Moses, but they don't say, here's mitzvah number one, here's mitzvah number two. They just say, you should do this or you shouldn't do this. And Maimonides himself, at the introduction to his Sefer HaMitzvahs, the book of mitzvahs, gives nine general principles as to determining when you're looking at a verse, is it a mitzvah? Is it part of a mitzvah? Is it not a mitzvah at all? So there, whereas he has his 613, so my Nachmanides has his 613, the Minchas Chinuch has his 613, and there's various and sundry lists of as to what is a mitzvah, what's not a mitzvah.
Right, I've seen lists of 617, 623. I mean, at some point I had to draw the line along the most traditionally available, not only number, but the order that I found to be most popular, if no other phrase could be used. But it was, as far as further research, that was arbitrary, favoring simply consensus, and that mm-hmm. was what I found on the internet. I mean, I had every book I could find. I went to all the Jewish bookstores and bought every book I could find on the mitzvot, and most of them seemed fairly consistent with the exception of those that divided it into the positive and negative mitzvot. And I just figured it was better if I just ran them through. It was more fun to do that thou shalt and thou shalt not alternating than just doing all the thou shalt nots and all the thou shalt.
Yeah, you get kind of steeped in the negative.
I'm going to mix it up.
Yes. I hear you. So how did you, I mean, if you could just talk generally, why did you pick this picture? Why did you pick that picture? That we would be here for weeks. But is there a general, once you got into the flow of things, did you sort of like, you take like a mitzvah, for example, not to substitute one animal for another animal, which is something I just happened to open the book up at random. And by that point, you're sort of like in a groove and said, oh yeah, I should do it this way.
Yeah, that's exactly what happened. There's one of the things that's happened after doing, work with and for religious institutions for many years is you sort of get these strange feelings, and I don't even know if these are kosher or admissible feelings, that your intuition is in fact validated by a higher power. And there's a certain kind of arrogance that you really don't want to advertise about that. But at the same time, you know, the alternative to that is the kind of illustration that doesn't fire the imagination. So, you know, one gets an image in one's head and says, I don't know why exactly, but if I'm thinking this as part of a larger, you know, human organism, then it's quite possible that other people will somehow resonate with this. Not necessarily get it, because I'm not even sure if I get it, you know, but sometimes you're simply told to do something, and you realize that what you're doing is something greater. You're doing, you know, chidur ha-mitzvah, and you figure, you know, at this point, if you pull back, that actually is, you'll pardon the use of my hyperbole here, but if you actually pull back and try to restrain yourself, in a funny sense, in my position as a professional artist, it's chilul Hashem, because you're not supposed to deny the intuitive impulse that you feel is given to you with the proper reasoning. That is, it's a certain kind of mystical allowance that I and many artists give themselves, which is not necessarily something that I want to talk about in terms of ethics, because that can validate a whole bunch of terrible things. But, you know, the art isn't really hurting anybody, as long as I'm doing it, as Reb Moshe said, with the right intentions. So I figured my intentions were right. I wanted to pick up an image that, in fact, would be startling but not transgressive. So there's a difference, as I mentioned in the introduction, there's a difference between subversion and transgression. And subversion can be interesting to start conversation. Transgression is simply an act of traitorous attack. And there was no place in the 613 that I was interested in doing anything that wasn't for the benefit of the community. So when these images come up, they are in fact, you know, I confess, they are in fact intuitive images, but they're catchy. They make you read a mitzvah that, you know, you're a rav, you know, you don't have to worry about this. But, you know, I have friends that, you know, that are not observant or don't even identify. And they think this book is cool. And I have this book sitting in their house like some time bomb. And they pick it up and they read it while they're smoking whatever they're smoking and drinking whatever they're drinking. And they're reading the mitzvot. I figured this is very funny to me. It's actually very cool. That's sort of like, you know, part of the intention. Not that I intended it to be a as I said in the beginning, a piece of missionizing. I needed to make this manifest or tangible in the world as a legitimate article to address visually, simply because Judaism needed to open up its capacity for visual absorption. And this was the heaviest and most serious topic I could approach. Mm-hmm. So when the images come up, they come up. You know.
Okay. If you're just tuning in, our guest today is Archie Randi. He's an artist, put together a book called The 613, illustrating all 613 commandments. Since you brought it up, when I was a kid, we used to sit around in various states of consciousness and analyze the lyrics to Beatles songs. Could you imagine people sitting around and saying, well, why did he pick that image for that commandment?
It's already happened. I had these. Once we realized the book was going to go into print, a weird thought occurred to me. Not that I want to get my ego involved in this, you know, but I thought there's whole generations of people who sit around and analyze Bob Dylan lyrics. And I've gotten many reviews on the book, and already in three of the reviews, the reviewers have made assumptions about the pictures that had nothing to do with whatever you can lightly call my intentions were. And I thought, this is wonderful. These pictures are actually working with chemical magic. Yes, people can sit around and analyze Beatles lyrics if they like, and I should be so honored that somebody should actually think about analyzing the, for lack of a better word, the iconography in these pictures. But of course it's going to happen, because the disconnect is great between the commandment and the image. So in a certain sense, I'm taunting or I'm tempting that process to occur. But again, it was never done with the intention of being a wise guy. I state my wise guy credentials in the introduction and then drop it there. The work exists as the work exists. People will will make conjectures about, you know, what the imagery represents in relationship to the mitzvah. And I figure, you know, that means that somebody spent 10 minutes thinking about a mitzvah that never would have occurred them to even read in their entire life. So that's really a good thing. Let them conjecture.
Indeed, fascinating. Now, there had been for many years an installation at the DIA. What it was 100 television screens. And each television screen was like playing some other movie or something like that. But when you step back, what you saw was the image of an American flag over the 100 TV screens. If you step back from this 100-foot by 17.5-foot installation that you've created, do you get a singular image?
Yes. Yes, because as I said, these images were originally pixels in a much larger painting, which does exist. The San Francisco Contemporary Museum of Jewish Art is going to show it as a painting in 2017. The painting was originally conceived in a much more humble fashion. That is, when the artist has all the television sets forming the American flag, that's an idea. And the idea can later be translated, as you just did, into a verbal message, the American flag. But the visual, as your wife well knows, works a little bit differently. It's not really able to be articulated back into words. It has its own kind of language. And the original 613 has the edges of each panel painted in what appears to be an orange-yellow in the book, but it's actually gold paint. And the images, as they're actually painted, are a little bit more matte and a little bit flatter than they appear in the book. And when the picture is assembled and all the panels are contiguous, the entire painting reflects this kind of warm golden glow into which you can individually perceive or enter the specific imagery. And when I was doing it, I was thinking basically of all the time we had lost as a visual culture and had to make up in terms of what world cultures have in their sacred spaces. And I thought, you know, Yiddishkeit has its own particular kind of sacredness. You know, it says that when Bezalel built the Mishkan, that it was filled with a substance. And that substance is sort of described as like jello. It's real substance, and the substance is holiness. And I thought the reflection off of these panels, when coalesced into this 1800 square foot painting, sends this glow towards the viewer, which is basically physical. You can bathe in it like sunlight. It really reflects. And you know, that's sort of the effect I was looking for in the initial painting. I wanted something that would announce its intention as you know, one can triangulate the thinking. This is the glow of the Tariag Mitzvot. Now, if you get into it individually, of course, there's millions of questions you can ask. And how many people have not debated every single one of these? Which is fine. That's the viewer's prerogative visually. But the first thing I want the viewer to see is this wall of faintly glowing yellow aura coming off the picture in which the viewer is enveloped. In the book, it's very different. The book, as I said, concentrates on the individual, you know, factors that make that up.
Right. I mean, if you're going to do it where you'd have to pick the whole thing, you'd have to make it 100 feet by 17.5 feet. So,
yeah,
indeed. So where is this work hanging now? Is it?
No, the work is in storage now. It's very difficult to find a venue that accommodates two difficult criteria. One is it has to have the space, which is it's very hard to find any institution that has 1,800 square feet of solid running space. And the second thing is it's Jewish. And Jewish imagery has been sort of curtailed from the visual discourse by mutual agreement of the Jewish community, which uses the art world to assimilate, and the non-Jewish community, which has no interest, to be kind, and on the far right, you know, anti-Semitic impulses about allowing Jewish imagery into the discourse. So it's very difficult to find an institution that will favor or applaud Jewish subject matter, and it's very difficult to find an institution that will, in fact, have the physical wall space to accommodate the painting. All of that was understood before I did it. I didn't do it to become you know, the person who installed this picture. I did it because it needed to be done. But right now it's packed up in storage, and, you know, thank God the San Francisco Jewish Museum is going to install it, which is something I'm looking forward to, because it hasn't been installed since that photograph on the back of the book, which was in my own warehouse studio.
How long will it be in San Francisco?
I'm sorry?
How long will it be in San Francisco?
I think it's going to be about a four-month show. They gave it a nice chunk of time there.
But we have to wait to 2017, and we have to get to San Francisco. So, okay, we are...
If any institutions out there are interested, you know, when I did it, I thought, you know, thinking in my Pollyannish way, you know, I've been in the art world all my life. That is, you know, for years before I started doing Jewish work, I was showing in major galleries. And I thought to myself, wow, I've just done something really, really strange and really interesting. I bet the Whitney or the Guggenheim is going to take this. And they didn't answer my letters, much less say, thank you, we're not interested. And I figured, oh, I had a kind of shock of realization there of the second proscription that I mentioned to you. That is, you know, this language is not really acceptable in the larger artistic discourse. You know, that kind of identity politics, that kind of identity art is still sort of on the outside for a number of reasons. So we'll wait to 2017, and
we'll maybe have to take a group tour to San Francisco in 2017 when it comes up.
I'll meet you there.
Okay, Archie, this is wonderful. Please keep us apprised of the goings on of the 613 and what happens with your wonderful work. And we want to thank you so much for coming on the Jewish Hour.
Thank you very much, Herschel. It was a pleasure, a great honor to speak to you, and thank you.
Okay,
bye-bye.
Take care. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and we'll be right back.
Stop paying more than your fair share of property tax now. I'm Stephen Poulter, attorney at law and president of Express Property Tax Appeals. Right now, your commercial property tax assessments are in the mail. Like many commercial property owners, you're probably paying unnecessary and exorbitant property taxes, potentially costing you hundreds of thousands of dollars every year. Express Property Tax Appeals can help. I recently reduced one of my clients' property tax values by $2 million, realizing $250,000 in real tax dollar savings. I can do the same for you. If you're a commercial property owner, manager, or broker and are tired of paying more than your fair share of property tax, call Express Property Tax Appeals now at 855-LOW-TAX-9 or online at lowtax9.com. That's 855-LOW-TAX-9 or online at lowtax9.com. You have nothing to lose except your looming property tax burden. I'm Stephen Poulter with Express Property Tax Appeals, and I look forward to saving you money on your property taxes.
The Art Studio of Oak Park is now accepting students. Whether you're a real beginner or have been at it for a lifetime, the Art Studio of Oak Park has something for you. All levels welcome, all ages welcome. Private tutoring or small friendly classes. Flexible hours available. The Art Studio of Oak Park is very affordable. Make your life better. Put art into your life. The Art Studio of Oak Park offers lessons in a strictly kosher environment. Call today, 248-542-5087. That's 248-542-5087. It's great having an art room right in the neighborhood.
Herschel Finman, here you are listening to the Jewish Hour for your listening pleasure. This is the Maccabees with their 2016 Passover song called Let My People Go.
For all the time that you kept us enslaved, and all the back-breaking labor you gave, forget your hardened heart, my friend, for goodness sake. 'Cause you don't wanna bring on all of these plagues. A few hundred years is quiet enough. And through it all, we didn't give up our faith and tradition. We can't stop our mission. We're ready to be moving on to the land of milk and honey. We're not gonna look back. Pharaoh, you should know that a God's gonna smite you. Until you free us, 'cause slavery is wrong. You've taken quite a heavy blow, and there are seven plagues to go. We must embark before you end up in the dark. So if you like the way your kingdom looks, Pharaoh, you should let my people go. And if you're thinking of still hope,
you should let my people go.
We gotta go pack up quickly. Did you hear the new decree? It said we're no longer welcome in Egypt. We're walking free. All of those years laying bricks led us here to this destiny. Part of the plan for the land we were promised. See, I'm like we're crossing the Red Sea. Cause we travel back, we live our history. Oh, when you believe you're part of the story. Yeah, we cross the water, but I try God, so let's go celebrate.
Assurance of quality and excellence in kosher? Look for the Michigan K on the label. What's it look like? The Lower Peninsula of Michigan with a K. It's the symbol of the Michigan Kosher Supervisors. Go to their website, mikosup.com. That's M-I for Michigan, K-O for kosher, and S-U-P for supervisors, mikosup.com, and find this month's featured products. You'll find Michigan K products wherever fine food is sold, especially at Natural Food Patch on West 9 Mile Road in Ferndale.
Herschel Finman here. You're listening to the Jewish Hour. We're playing a cappella music for your enjoyment. We'll talk about that sometime in the future, why we're doing that. Stay tuned. This is the Y Studs, another group. They started about a year or two, and this is a song called Seder Nights.
Passover's tonight. All the guests are coming through the door. Let's have some fun. For cups of more, wash your hands clean. But with a blessing, this time you don't make it. You grab your cream, hand dipping in the salt water, but wine, tears from your eyes.
To see others' side.
Someone you know have an addiction to opiates? Ready to take your life back but don't have the time for a long inpatient program? MDS Drug Detox is a team of physicians with extensive experience in the field of rapid drug detox under anesthesia. MDS is the nation's only rapid opiate detox under anesthesia facility with the same doctors, RNs, and certified paramedics attending the entire drug detox process. MDS Drug Detox is safe and effective. Their goal is to provide the best, the safest, and the most economical way to free you from your addiction. MDS uses the highest standards of care and the best FDA-approved medications. MDS Drug Detox understands what your concerns are. Make the call today, 888-637-6968, or go online to www.mdsdrugdetox.com. That's 888-637-6968, MDS Drug Detox. Why go to a hospital to get healthy? At Encompass Healthcare, you get the state-of-the-art wound care like in a hospital. The same medicines, the same everything without being in a hospital. Why put yourself at risk of getting a hospital-borne infection? Did you know that last year, 1 in 6 people died in America because of infections they got in hospitals? Encompass Healthcare is an outpatient facility. That means you get your wound care treatment and then go home. There are no wait times at Encompass Healthcare like in ERs. Healthcare is personal and works better, faster, and easier. Encompass Healthcare provides a state-of-the-art outpatient facility close to where you live. Call 248-624-9800. That's 624-9800. Auto accident, workman's comp, and most insurance is accepted. Encompass Healthcare's goal is to get you healthy with as little disturbance to your daily activities. Call 248-624-9800.
Hey, Shulfin, here you are listening to the Jewish Hour. The portion of this week is Acharei Mais, and it is to be found in the book of Leviticus in chapter 16 and following. The first part of the portion is divided into three. The first part of the portion deals with the way the high priest is supposed to go into the Holy of Holies on the Day of Atonement. The middle part of the portion deals with slaughtering animals, mostly for food consumption. And the last part of the portion deals with forbidden and illicit relations. Very interesting, the juxtaposition of these. And the question becomes greater when we see that the morning of Yom Kippur, we read in the synagogue the portion that deals with the high priest going into the Holy of Holies on Yom Kippur, which that, of course, makes sense. In the afternoon, we have a special Torah reading, which normally, if we're going to read it again, we would probably take it from like the book of Numbers someplace where it talks about, or Leviticus somewhere where it talks about the Yom Kippur and keeping the holiday, but no. The afternoon part of the ceremony, afternoon part of Yom Kippur, which it says, according to Jewish heritage, that the day gets holier as it progresses. So the afternoon is therefore holier than the morning. We read this and the end of this week's portion, which deals with illicit relations. So he had asked the question, why is it seen such a need to put one of the highest ideals of Judaism, the high priest and his communion with God on the Day of Atonement, together with laws preventing sleeping with, say, one sister? Judaism is very practical, very pragmatic. When it comes to atonement, which means when we're talking atonement, it's the Almighty doing the atoning. It's not us. We do the repenting. We come back. We say we're sorry. We're never going to do it again. And God says, okay, you guys are forgiven. It's one thing to speak in ethereal terms. You know, on the Day of Atonement, not only do we say the verse during the prayers of Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one, out loud in unison, but the whole year we say the second verse, which is blessed be the name of his kingdom forever and ever, we say it very softly. But on Yom Kippur, we say it very loudly to emulate the ministering angels that say that stanza very loud. So here it is that we're on the level of angels. So it's good to think, okay, fine, one day a year, you know what, I don't need to eat. It's a wonderful thing. But practically speaking, as high as we may go, people are still people. And how is it that we really serve God? Serving God is not by going to a house of worship. My grandmother, of blessed memory, used to say, everybody looks pious when they're in the synagogue. They have their prayer book, they have their prayer shawl, they're doing their thing over there, they're engrossed in that doing, they're saying the words. Everybody looks pious. When is it that a person's piety is expressed? How do they conduct their daily mundane affairs? Are they doing what's expected them in the realm of Menschlichkeit? Menschlichkeit means proper human behavior. So it's okay to understand, yes, we, the beginning of the portion, we have to relate to God. But the statement in the Talmud is, everything goes according to the end. And if that be the case, the end of the portion is, let's be moral, good people. Speaking of everything going according to the end, we're getting close to the end of the hour. Let's take a quick commercial break, and we'll be right back. You're listening to The Jewish Hour.
Hi, this is Spex Howard from the Spex Howard School of Broadcast Arts. We're happy to sponsor The Jewish Hour and bring quality radio programming to the community. While much of the funding for The Jewish Hour comes from its sponsors, it's listeners like you that help keep The Jewish Hour on the air. Please send your tax-deductible donation to The Jewish Hour, 14,000 West 9 Mile Road, Oak Park, Michigan, 48237. That's 14,000 West 9 Mile Road, Oak Park, Michigan, 48237. Your help is greatly appreciated.
Herschel Finman here. You are listening to The Jewish Hour. Want to get in touch with me? RabbiFinman.com. RabbiFinman.com. There you'll find archived editions of the show. You'll find archived editions of the E-Parsha, Hasidic U Story, U-Parsha. These are different media by which yours truly presents insights into Judaism in a hopefully entertaining and educational manner. You'll also find classes, these are not baby classes. This is real stuff over here. Go to my classes page. Start from the beginning. Do a binge. We've been posting this class since July of 2009. One book, which is called The Tanya. It is the basic work on Hasidic thought. And we do it greatly in depth, but in a way which is understandable to everyone. So go check that one out. And of course, there's the very important donations page. This is, believe it or not, May 1st. Guess what? We've got a bill to pay. April, thank God, people were really good during Passover. Maybe I should take a week off in the month and you should, every month and just do music. And maybe people would, because people just came through. And I appreciate your efforts and getting it. We did pay for the month of April already. So, but it's May 1st. Here we are again. Listen, if we get May paid off like this week or like next week, then I'm not going to make a bleed out or no, without even making any promises. I'm not going to do any pledges for the rest of the month. So here's the challenge. We need you to go to your computer, go to rabbifinman.com, click on the donations page. Mark in, hit one of the tabs, put in the number that you want. It's all good. If you have a PayPal account, it takes 30 seconds. If you have a doing it by credit card, it takes a minute. You have to enter in your data. It takes actually 3 minutes. I won't exaggerate. You have to enter in all your data, and then it goes. And you could set it up so it goes monthly, and you don't have to do it again. It just goes, and you're doing it. And then the Jewish Hour, which is 20 years in existence, is doing its thing. Don't like doing internet credit cards? Understood. I can understand that. Send your contribution of any amount in an envelope to, you can put in a box too, The Jewish Hour, 14,000 West 9 Mile Road, Oak Park, Michigan, 48237. That's going to do it for today. We hope we had a chance to entertain you a bit. We hope we had a chance to educate you a bit. We hope to see you back again next week. Have a great week and take care.
The maror go down, and just a dip dip of charoses helps the maror go down in a more respiteful way. So if you're hungry for a snack, but you feel stuck cause it's Pesach, get some apples, almonds, cinnamon, and red wine. Add more wine and you'll feel fine.